Good evening, everyone. I read recently that Martin Luther King, the late Reverend Martin Luther King, used to devote one day a week to what he called reflection. And I don't know if that meant meditation, prayer, he called it reflection. And someone asked him if that was, given the crisis of civil rights in the United States and the difficult times that Black Americans, but the whole culture were going through, if that was really the best use of his time, if maybe he shouldn't be doing something else that day. And he responded that no, he felt that it was his moral obligation to take that day of reflection. That without that, if he didn't reflect on the movement, you know, that he was involved with, the civil rights movement, if he didn't reflect on the state of the country, life, whether it was his spiritual life or the political life, if he didn't do that, it would be a disservice to all of those things that he was working for. And that he therefore said it was his moral obligation to his cause, to his community, to his people, to the country, to take that day to reflect. Now, we can see this in our own lives and practice. We can see meditation as that. The importance of taking this time it's not reflection in the same way that King was doing it, although I don't really know what he did. Maybe he did like Mother Teresa, who, when she prayed, she listened to God. And when someone asked her what God did, what God said, she said nothing. He just listens. And that's what our practice is. And I'm assuming that's what King's reflection was. This deep listening to the sounds of the world, to looking, this deep reflection, looking into the things of the world, each moment. And our practice makes that possible, to look straight in the face of every moment. And some of those moments are wonderful. Some of them are not. And yet, we can see it as our obligation to look into them. Our obligation to ourselves. It's not like a duty that someone is imposing on us. But if we want to be fully alive in this world as it is, we have to look into each moment as it is. There's no other possible way. An American, I think a Zen teacher, said, like all of us, he was upset, feeling helpless, angry, frightened, worried about the situation with the invasion of Ukraine. But he had his sitting practice and he stayed with it. And suddenly one day he said, I had this realization, I am Ukrainian. And then he continued, he said, I don't mean like, when I was reading this, I thought, okay, so this is, I know this. We know this in France too, you know. Je suis Charlie. So, you know, we are all Ukrainian. True. True. But he said, that's not what I mean. He said, I suddenly remembered a conversation that I had with my grandfather, who had told me he was born in Denver in the United States, but that his grandparents had come from Ukraine. And that's all he really knew, this guy, this Zen teacher who was talking. And he'd completely forgotten about this. And apparently his grandfather didn't tell him any more than that. Probably there's some traumatic thing. You know, almost every Ukrainian family has traumatic things. And especially the immigrants, because they fled for some reason, right? Some trauma. So he didn't know anything more than that. But he asked around in his family, extended family, and someone said, yeah, that's true. They came from a village in eastern Ukraine. So they told him the name of the village. And so he looked it up. He saw it on the map. And suddenly he thought, there are people in that village who maybe knew my great-grandparents, or who are living in the house that my great-grandparents lived in. Know someone who knew my great-grandparents. And suddenly everything seemed different to him. Not that he knew what to do, but that he could receive what was happening in a different way. And also really took seriously, he's a Zen teacher, so I imagine serious, but really saw his meditation practice in a different way as well. That what he needed to do, and we've said this every week here, and every time we've talked about this, what he needed to do was to look into here and now, his situation, the world here in his, on his cushion, in his community. And that's where he needs to shine the light. That's where he needs to act. That's where he needs to be fully present. Because he is Ukrainian, but we can all look like he did. And so now all of us, because I'm telling you this story, are connected to this guy, this American Zen teacher, not this one, but another one, an American Zen teacher who had great grandparents who are Ukrainian. So we are also connected. We are also like the people living in his great grandparents' house, or the people who knew the friends of his, whose great grandparents knew his great grandparents, or who knows, you know, what the connections are. But they're there. They're there. We just need to look closely. That's what we always say in this practice. Look closer. And people are working on koans and they don't know and they really, you know, are stuck. And I often say to them, look closer. Look closer, closer, closer. And that's what our practice of sitting helps us to do. There's a French poet who called Antoine Images, I think, and I think he recently died. But he, in a book of kind of, it's like a notebook that I read of his, which is about his writing, but about his life and whatever. And he, I have to kind of translate this from French. He said, to seize the depth, in French he says profondeur, saisir la profondeur, we have to start by looking at the surface. Don't, you know, he says, don't neglect the surface. Look at it attentively. Pay attention to the surface. Otherwise, if we don't do that, we invent the depth much more than we discover it. This is true for a poet. This is true for any artist. This is true for any of us in whatever we do in our lives and in our practice. So, you know, we could say, okay, the surface and the depth. We could also say, you know, the appearance and the true nature, or the form and the emptiness. Sometimes we use those phrases. But we have to look closely at the appearance, not fixate on it, and not come to it with our ideas and opinions about it, but come to it with that no mind, that open heart, that isn't expecting anything. It's like looking at it for the first time. Looking at something for the first time. Like I, you know, I've told you about my going for my walks and taking a different route so that I'm seeing it completely new, completely different. And then, well, Sayu was saying goodbye to us. Bye, Sayu. And then we can see if we can fully embrace what this poet, what Antoine Images calls the surface, then we can discover the depth, which is bottomless, limitless. And that's frightening, and that's why we focus on the surface. When we stick only to the surface or ignore the surface and invent something that we think is the depth, because that limitless, boundless, unfathomable depth is frightening. Or can be frightening. You know, when we look into what's happening in the world, and it's what a mess. You know, what a mess it is. And yet some really fascinating things. You know, we can look at the Volodymyr Zelensky and say, wow, he has really put a human face on Ukraine. He is really bringing it into our homes, into our hearts, tirelessly. He's just endlessly coming forth. Because he wants to share with us. Of course, he has motivations why he wants to share with us, but he could have someone else go out there and talk for him, right? he could flee. He could go, you know, into exile in Poland and talk from, you know, the Ukrainian embassy in Warsaw. He's really making it alive for us. And he's making alive his courage and his heroics and his people. Most of us probably just Ukraine was just some surface thing. We didn't really know, you know, we probably knew Kyiv was the capital, but, you know, many people have said to me, wow, I didn't even know Odessa was in Ukraine. A lot of the place names we never knew before. Or in preparing writing workshops, I've found out so much about Ukrainian literature. I had no idea. I mean, even authors that I always thought were Russian are really, in fact, Ukrainian. You know, with our heart and our presence, like Zelensky, we have the opportunity to look closely and experience the connection, the depth, the place where we're all connected. Not what separates us, but how we're all connected. No, because really what separates us is space, which we measure in kilometers or miles. Time, because there's time difference, right? But other than that, nothing really separates us. And those are concepts, those are constructs of our mind. Language maybe separates us, but even then, you know, we have common language that we can speak, not only because everyone today more or less speaks English, but the language of the heart. The language of being human. The language of loss, the language of joy, all of these expressions we share. You know, in our, before COVID, when we used to do online retreats, we didn't meet on Zoom. We met on my blog, which I have not put anything on since COVID began. And so I would post something. Many of you here participated. I would post something each morning and something to reflect upon for the day. And then people were asked to, in the comments section, comment, tell us what their day was like. And I always said, everyone you meet today is on retreat with you. Because you're on retreat, they're in the retreat with you. And even the people you don't meet are on the retreat with you. Because they are meeting with the people who you met. And then other people are meeting with other people, and it's endless. So the entire world is on retreat. The universe is on retreat. Now, we did that for a week, and I used to give a schedule, and we were each supposed to sit on our own, comment. It was very rich. People loved it, mostly. And I think we had a true experience of that no boundaries, no separation. If we stayed with it for, you know, if we really did it, our colleagues were on retreat with us. And then we couldn't even say there was beginning and end to the retreat. Of course, we did just because it made it easier to focus, but really there was no end to the retreat. Life is the retreat. Every moment. So we are all Ukrainian, right? What do? Some people say, oh, what would I do if I was Zelensky? Well, you know, it doesn't really matter. That's not the question. As someone a few weeks ago, someone asked that question, you know, what would I do about my children if I was in Ukraine? It's a good question. At the same time, what matters is here, what you do here, now. And like Martin Luther King, sitting down and reflecting is essential to know how to then stand up and answer, be present here and now. Anyone like to say something? Questions, comments? What's happening for you?
Hi, everybody. It's very good for me that you mentioned this business of being, of going back to, or going back, or going to surface practice, because I've been doing that recently. I'm having a very hard time sitting and staying focused on anything. There are all kinds of things going through my head. So I thought, well, okay, instead of going working on my koan, I'd go back to just counting breath and listening to the sounds of the world. And I felt a little bit almost guilty, as if it was kind of cheating, because it supposedly it's easier. In fact, it really isn't all that easy when you get right down to it. But then I started thinking, in at least in the drums, I suppose this is true for other instruments, you always, or at least I did with my teacher, we always started every session by going back to the fundamentals. You do at least 10 or 15 minutes of fundamental, the first exercises you ever started with. And it's really interesting. First of all, the temptation to say, I did this better before when I first started doing it, all the, because it's not the first time anymore. So all the things that come up that make it actually pretty complex to be simple about it, in a way. And the other thing that came up when you were talking, Rishi, is that my mother used to say that every six person, we know somebody. Now, she may have made that up. My daughter's gotten kooky, but it's probably as true. Or we know maybe not somebody, but something in common. So every six person that you talk to, there's been some sort of meaning in your life or in their life or something.
Thank you. Yeah, and I guess doing those beginner's exercises, that helps return us to beginner's mind, you know, and that absolutely. I'm personally surprised at how many people that I've been talking with, how many people actually have real ties to Ukraine. You know, parents, grandparents who fled, or, you know, their husband's family was from Ukraine, or a lot of them are Jewish, but not only. Because, you know, the Jews, terrible things happened to them in Ukraine, but not only. You know, and there's, it's really, really amazing. I'm amazed at how many people I know, or I've, you know, like you say, every sixth person, you know. Joao?
Good evening, everyone. What you said in the beginning about Martin Luther King and the day of reflection he took every week, it was interesting because just this morning after the sitting, José Eduardo is not here now with us. He asked me if I could stay a bit while longer because there was something he wanted to ask me about the retreat, and we talked for a while, and one of the things that came up was actually something. Sometimes you will say this, you will talk about this, how radical it is, what this that we do, this sitting, sitting in meditation, doing nothing. And yeah, how radical that was very, that was very present for us this morning when we were discussing this. It's really very extreme. To listen. You also talked about listen to the sounds of the world. It's it changes a lot. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. And you know, I do always say that this is the most radical thing that you can do in today's world. Personally, I love that. But, you know, it doesn't matter if we like it or not. It's true. It's just so radically countercultural. Yeah. Freddie?
Good evening, everyone. I have a very dear friend of mine. We have a lot of talk and used to talk a lot, and she's really more into, when she has time, she goes to farms and places when she works. And live with the people, the inhabitant. And she does that during the holidays. She loved it. And when she knew that I was sitting and I was, she said, "What? You sit and you do nothing? What? And you pay for it?" My dear Freddie, you're really, 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 you should do something more active. But I respect her, she respects me. But for her, to be active, to do things, to, that's life. It was just about what you say, Roshi. It's radical. To people, it's like, it's insane.
Well, and I think, you know, Martin Luther King, that was probably someone's reaction too when he said that he took a day of reflection was, no, you know, we have to be in the streets and we have to, you know, do things and, yeah. And yet the more that we sit, the more that we do make this radical step, the more clearly we see what needs to be done and the more easily we can do it. Because when we see the non-separation, you know, when we see that we are all Ukrainian, then that changes, that's radical. It changes how we then will treat each other.
Stopping and seeing.
What?
The two wings of the bird. Stopping and seeing.
Yeah.
Hi. Oh, sorry, Anna. Were you going to speak? Sorry. When you were saying that we are all Ukrainians, like a thought came to mind of we are all Russians as well.
Absolutely.
And I think that's sometimes the hardest to see, because it's, well, at least on my perspective, it's easier to identify with the victim. And that's something that was quite easy when I was in retreat in Auschwitz, when I did the Zen Peacemakers retreat. It was very easy to identify with the victim, but at the same time, if we look a bit deeper, I think most of the times, at least myself, I could see myself most of the times on the role of the perpetrator as well, because it's in the way of like how my life causes suffering to so many people, the people that do my clothing, the people that make my clothing, the people that, you know, grow my the vegetables I eat, the animals I sometimes eat, and all that stuff. I think that's, well, you've talked a lot about it as well. I just thought I'd bring this up as well. But, yeah.
Yeah. Good point. Thank you for mentioning that, because it is true. Yeah. Which makes it even more tragic that the Russians and the Ukrainians are fighting, because they're the same, they're one. Anna.
Good evening, everybody. Today, I was going in a street in Lisbon, and a man began to talk to me just like that. He passed nearby and began to talk. He could speak Portuguese, although he was not Portuguese, and I don't know his nationality, but he sounded the way he tried to speak Portuguese in a way that I could perfectly understand. But the accent sounded to me that maybe he came from, I don't know, Ukraine or Lithuania or some country, because there is a special accent. And then he told me He and his wife, they need to work. And he said different things that I don't remember very well about the need of work. I can do this, this, and this, and my wife can do this, this, and this. And I listened, and then I said, I'm sorry, but I cannot help you. I don't know nothing that could help you. And he was very angry with me when I said, help you. And he said, don't say help to me. This is very offensive. I'm not asking for help. I'm asking for work. And then he began to talk his own language, and I didn't understand what he was angry with me. And he went away. So it's I can help you, I cannot help you is a way of saying. It's not really help, it's a way of, I see it this way, it's a way of giving an answer when we don't have any answer at all. But that make me, he was right, he was not, he didn't tell me, help me please. He said, I'm looking for a job, a work. So that's what I wanted to share with you. And that I went on my way, you know, thinking he was right, but what kind of answer could I give to him? I don't know.
In situations like that, you know, we can sometimes look at it that it wasn't that your answer was wrong or bad, or that he was right and you were wrong. His reaction belongs to him, and your answer belongs to you, and someone else. Your intention was not to condescend or to make him feel bad because you thought he was asking for help. And his reaction comes from, we don't know what, you know, probably he's quite, you know, he really needs work and he doesn't know what to do. And is probably sensitive about that, and probably has met other people who weren't as nice as you were and listened to him. I don't know. So, you know, we can maybe take a little of the beating off of ourselves, because we tend to beat ourselves up, and stay with what your intention was, and that you did the best you could. You responded how it felt appropriate to you. His reaction, you can't control.
Yes, but I really think it was a good point. His answer was a very good point. But anyway, I go on with no answer to him. But that shaked me. Well, that shake me in a way that make me think, you know, more about the situation and more about how to respond.
Well, and a bigger, because this is an interesting thing about help. Just a minute, I have a quote about that. No. I don't have it. It talks about that. I've said it before. It's something about, you know, if we, it's about helping fixing, you know, if we want to fix, does anyone remember? I've said this quote before. If you want to fix, it means you think something is broken. If you want to help, you think someone is helpless. Or, you know, I can't remember exactly what it was. I'll find it and I'll share it at some point. I've brought it up before. But it is true. It really helps us to helps. It has us look at these words and then, well, what are we intending when we say that? Are we looking at this person as, like, you know, needy? I can't remember what it is. I wish I could find it. So good point too, Anna. Yeah. I used to have that quote on my bookcase there, but it's been lost. I might take this opportunity to, if we are interested in taking some kind of action as we best we can from here, the Warsaw Zen group that is linked to White Plum, to our lineage, and the Zen Peacemakers, and the foundation that was created by the daughter of the woman who founded the Warsaw Zen community, Malgosia Brownick, who some of you maybe knew or heard of, I don't know. Joa definitely, but I don't know if anyone else did, but who has since died. But her, they have really started an entire movement of helping. There's that word again. They've made contact with groups in Ukraine, particularly doctors, hospitals, and other groups that are bringing, you know, non-military groups, even some military groups they've become connected with. And they're buying, they receive lists from the hospital of what they need, or lists from the military what they need. And they're buying this in Warsaw and bringing it to the Ukrainian border, and people are coming to get it. And they're doing a huge fundraising around this. So if you're interested, and I have the lists of, you know, there's like a list of what the hospital needs, everything from like bandages to insulin, to helmets for people so that they, you know, they can, if they have to go out and there's a danger of missiles or something, they have helmets to protect themselves, all kinds of things. They're doing a fundraising. And so if you're interested, if you want to contribute money to a group that you know is what they're doing, and that you know the money, that that's what it will go to, this is an opportunity. I'm going to talk to our board and see if Wildflower can make some kind of donation. Because we do feel really helpless, and that is something that we can do, maybe, you know. Contribute in some way.
Maybe we could put a link on our webpage.
Yeah.
Like a the name of the organization or something.
Yeah. Sure. That's a good idea. I have all that information. And I know these people personally. I know Andre, who was Magosha's husband. And if you went to Auschwitz, Joanna, you met him, I'm sure, because he was one of the Auschwitz organizers. And his daughter, and their daughter, I know well as well.
Is there a mechanism? I mean, do we know that we give to Wildflower and Wildflower gives to them, or it hasn't been set up yet?
We could do that, or there's also a link. There's a PayPal link that they have that maybe a wire transfer too, but I think it's PayPal, but. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, maybe I can, because they sent a whole bunch of documentation about the letter explaining what their mission is and how they, you know, they said as Poles, they feel like the Ukrainians are their brothers. I mean, and that it could be happening to them. So it's not only we are Ukrainian, but it could be happening to us. And for the Polish people, it's very close. You know, it's not as far away as it is for us. So. Yeah, we'll figure out some way to get the information around. So that's an example of people who meditate, who do a lot of sitting, and then when they stand up, they take action. Well, if no one has anything else to add, I guess we can finish. And yeah, Freddie.
I just want to thank everyone for their testimony. It was very touching, very, very helpful. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you, Freddie.